Game time.
Time is now!
Driven by Briggs Auto Lane.
Let's have some fun. Let's go!
And BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Welcome to Hour 2 of the game. John Kurtz, Tyler Dreiling, Mitch Fortner. If only you guys could hear the things we talk about between hours. Mitch will defend his old Twitter account at 525. More Darren Sproles at 540. Jabroni of the Week, 550. Coming up here in the open, discussion that was spawned on K-State Twitter, what I'll call K-State Twitter, earlier today about Ronnie Magruder, because we do have some more audio to play from him. He met with the media earlier today. He's hanging out in town. A bunch of former basketball players have been back. It was great stuff. I'm telling you, Ronnie Magruder, one of the most thoughtful guys that you could come across. 537-1350, 866-776-1350 to call the show. You can find us on Twitter at TheGameKMAN as well. Mitch has been reprimanded by Shaylin Klein for tweeting during her segment, but then Mitch made up by putting a nice shameless plug of ShaylinKlein.com for basketball camps, so he made up for it. Enjoyed that exchange on Twitter. So things are going well here. Feel like this has been a good show so far. Ronnie Magruder, we played some of the audio that of just his comments earlier today. He spoke really just about his journey to the NBA. He spent time in the D-League overseas. And really, I love the fact that he mentioned, I didn't want to go the overseas route like a lot of guys do. He tried to make it in the D-League. It wound up paying off for him, even though it's less money, more of a grind, like less cool places that you could be as opposed to playing overseas. He did it the hard way, and he has made it to the NBA. Now, some of the hard way probably comes from what he learned at K-State playing under Frank Martin. He's one of the few guys that bridged the gap there between Frank Martin and Bruce Weber. But Frank Martin recruited him. He wound up playing three seasons for Frank Martin at K-State before his final year with Bruce Weber. And, man, it's the hard knock life playing for Frank. We know that as Cult of Frankers over here. Ronnie Magruder thinks he learned quite a bit as far as life lessons go from Frank.
Especially playing for Coach Frank, man. Like, he never allowed you to take a play off. He expected so much from you, every play, every possession. You know, just taking that into my pro career, you know, because if you did that here, you were going to get that stare. And that wasn't something that you wanted, you know, as a young kid. So, you know, that just goes on with you. You get used to just doing things the proper way, the things that he would, you know, the way he would want you to play.
I don't think it's just when you're a young kid that you don't want that Frank Martin stare. I think it's like, when you're anybody, you don't want that Frank Martin stare. That's pretty good motivation. No. I like this, too. This one just made me laugh. This was like he was answering another question somewhat related to Frank Martin and stopped to sort of interject this. I think we all have seen examples of this and how Frank could be.
You know what's crazy? What was crazy about Frank? You meet him in the offseason, like you would think he's just the nicest guy in the world. Like, man, I can't wait to play with this guy. This guy's nice here, but... So it's Midnight Madness hit, man. And a rude awakening.
Don't want to get on his bad side. I think that's for sure. Last thing I'll play here from Ronnie Magruder is the epitome, I think, of why he has made it to where he is at right now. In addition to having the big ultimate dream and the ultimate goal of playing in the NBA, which was the great quote from earlier, I didn't dream of playing overseas when I grew up. I dreamed of playing in the NBA, so I wanted to try and go that route. But it's also just the work ethic that he has had, man. Like, I when he was coming out, I thought, I love Rodney. He was tremendous here, but I don't think he has a shot in the NBA because you're typically seeing guys like him if they have a role. You know, like one thing, like you're a defense guy, you are or like a 3-and-D guy is really a pretty common thing there. And he was a good shooter, but I didn't think he was like Cartier Martin level shooter, where like that's why Cartier got some time in the NBA because he could just stand in the corner and stick threes. You have a role. Al Korver's playing for the Miami Heat, the Cleveland Cavs in the NBA Finals, so he can just walk around there and shoot the heck out of the ball. What Ronnie Magruder did was just basically will him into a guy that was enough energy and defense and doing the little things to be effective and be a starter for predominantly an entire NBA season, and that's all because of the way he approaches this. Listen to this, and I think a lot of people think when you do enter an offseason like this, guys just go back and chill and kick it, and maybe that is true for a lot of guys, but certainly not Ronnie Magruder.
That's the main thing. Come to work every day, be professional. Treat it as a job. Don't treat it as just basketball. Treat it as a job. Like people ask me, am I going on vacation? Everybody's still working now who has regular jobs. You take a couple days off, but you got to work. It's a job. It's not just basketball. It's a job. It's a business. And if you take take days off and take weeks off. That's the time you got to make up and get back on track. But it's just fine tuning. You don't have to kill yourself. You know, you just treat it as a job. Get work in, get shots up, do the little things, and you know, in August, then that's when you really crank it up, and you know it's go time.
You know what that almost sounds like? Sounds like get a little bit better every day.
Yeah.
Just out here trying to get a little bit better every day. He's saying that like it doesn't have to be just an all-out assault, but find something to get better at every single day. And eventually, over time, it adds up, and it has for Roddy Magruder. Now, we preface this discussion with a lot of positive talk about Roddy. I mean, it's hard to find anything negative to say about Roddy Magruder, not only in his time here at K-State, but what he's turned into, and he is a guy that's now representative of the program in the NBA. But the conversation that this naturally led to on Twitter when K-State fans saw those of us that were there at the press conference, there was a lot of media there, just tweeting out some of the Roddy Magruder quotes and talking about him and how things are going. The discussion turns to, all right, well, is his jersey going to be in the rafters at Bramlage Coliseum? And this is where I hope nobody takes this ever as any sort of hate or running down Roddy Magruder and his accomplishments here. He helped lead the team to the first shared conference title in forever, certainly since I've been conscious and watching K-State basketball. And I love him for that and his contributions for that. He was a part of the Elite Eight team. He, for 2 years, basically averaged 16 points, 5 rebounds. Great numbers in the Big 12. But I don't think that clears the threshold for what you should have for a jersey that goes up in the rafters. I think you're talking consensus All-American type of guy. And if it's not consensus All-American, because I don't really like having just a set criteria that every single person has to fit or they're not in the rafters, but I think you're talking consensus All-American or some sort of extenuating circumstance. Something else really extraordinary about them is going to get them in the rafters, and I don't think that Roddy Magruder fits into that category.
I agree, and I think that this may surprise you because I'm such a numbers-oriented guy, so statistically oriented. I mean, yesterday on the show I was comparing Mato Sala and Isaiah Maurice and their numbers against NCAA tournament teams from last year. So I'm always digging into that kind of thing. But when these debates come up, it really comes down to the more intangible impact that I feel like a player had on the program more than just their numbers. And his numbers are fine, but that's not really what we're talking about here. He was really good, but he did not have that legendary status that like a Jacob Pullen had. He did not have that that almost cult-like following. You know, you saw his jerseys around campus, sure, but he just came a step short, I think, of reaching that other tier that gets you to the rafters in Bramlage, in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, Jacob Pullen's the all-time leading scorer at K-State. I'm not sure if his senior year he was a consensus All-American. Like, I would think he probably was. I'd have to go look that up, but being the all-time leading scorer and what he contributed over time to the program, that obviously gets you to that point, and I'm sure someday Jacob Pullen's jersey will be up there. Maybe that could be another discussion as to why that hasn't happened yet and when it will happen. But, yeah, I don't think Roddy Magruder is on that level. The example that I would give for, all right, if you're not going to be the consensus All-American, all-everything type of player there, why you could get yourself in the rafters, I got some pushback on this, like on Twitter, look at Kansas. They put Mario Chalmers' jersey up in the rafters. Okay, Mario Chalmers was a fringe All-American type of player, very good player. Really, honestly, close to where Roddy Magruder is at, what we're talking about here. But Mario Chalmers also, for a top five all-time basketball program, hit the most iconic shot in their history to win a national championship. I mean, that was in the national championship game. They're not winning that without the Mario Chalmers shot. That's the exception. You get your jersey put up in the rafters there because people will literally never forget Mario Chalmers because of that shot. So
I agree.
That's the type of exception I'm talking about. And to me, again, like Michael Beasley, I'm sure was consensus All-American. He should have been the player of the year that year, but there was too much psycho T-love for Tyler Hansbrough at North Carolina. I mean, that's another guy to me. Dude, I realize he was only here for 1 year, but talking about the re-energization, is this a word, re-energization? re-energizing the K-State basketball program.
That would be one for the buzzer noise right there.
Yeah, don't quote me on that. Re-energizing the basketball program. Michael Beasley absolutely did that, helped jumpstart it. He was a consensus All-American. He ended the most embarrassing streak that's ever existed with this basketball program. Not single-handedly, but fairly close. Like, Michael Beasley's jersey belongs up there.
Jacob Pullum, absolutely. By the way, a third-team All-American from the Sporting News, but that's it. That's
for his senior year, that was it?
That was it. Yeah. Boy. Scotty Reynolds, Evan Turner, John Tough Wall, crowd. Wesley Johnson, all as consensus All-Americans.
Oh, Wesley Johnson. Oh, God.
Well, guess where he played? Syracuse.
Well, yeah, we started at Iowa State. Mm-hmm. Wound up at Syracuse. Oh, that now you just made me angry. But, yeah, look, I mean, I think Jacob Pullen and Michael Beasley, those are the two guys from this era that we're talking about that I would really advocate deserve to have their jerseys up in the rafters. I don't think I would go Ronnie Magruder.
He was more what immediately came to mind when this debate first came up was he is a lot closer to Cartier Martin than he is to Jacob Pullen. And that's still good company. Cartier Martin was a great college player.
Tremendous.
But you have to be just on another level to earn that distinction. I just don't think that either of those players reached it.
I definitely think there's an aspect of Ronnie Magruder here that is people being prisoners of the moment. Because did we ever hear like a big push after Ronnie had left and was out of sight, out of mind, playing in the D-League, playing overseas? Did we hear a push for, hey, Ronnie's jersey needs to be in the rafters?
I think people were more concerned about where the program was headed at that time than that.
Yeah, so the answer is no, there wasn't. But what's happened now is he's gone through in the NBA and made it for a year as an NBA player, and people get excited about that. They're now thinking about him again. And you start to glamorize more so what he did at K-State now that you're seeing him succeed in the NBA. And like, that's fine. Like, I'm all for Ronnie Magruder Love Fest. But it doesn't change the facts of, you know, what happened in his career. We didn't get that push right when he graduated. It's happening now because he's in the NBA with the Miami Heat. That's what you have happening here, and I think that's the only reason that it gets brought up on Twitter today. We're not having this conversation if not only that he's in the NBA, but if he hadn't been back in Manhattan right now and met with all the media, nobody's having this conversation. It's just one of those things where it pops into people's heads. But like, you know, we saw another guy that covers the team do a Twitter poll, and it was like 60% of people, 61%, something like that. We're saying, yeah, his jersey should be in the rafters. Let's not be prisoners of the moment here to him being in the NBA. And again, I wish Ronnie the best. I loved him, loved watching him play. I think he's a phenomenal basketball player and could not be a better guy or better human being. I just don't think I don't think he's clearing the threshold to be up there in the rafters.
That poll is 54-46 now.
Okay.
So
okay.
Getting closer.
Okay, good. Good, good, good. Jabroni of the Week at 5:50. When we come back, though, randomly, earlier today, I was looking at somebody else on Twitter, and I saw that they were being followed by Mitch Fortner, and it was like a picture of Mitch. It looked different than what his actual Twitter profile picture is right now, so I was like, oh, Mitch must have changed his picture, and I click on it, and what I found was an old Mitch Fortner Twitter account that had not been used since 2012, so Mitch will have to defend his tweets from the old Twitter account next.
And have no desire to find out.
It's Defend Your Tweet.
It's been a little while since we have had a chance to do this as we return here on the game, and this one will be a bit different, but the general idea here is keeps people in check. Can't be throwing out nonsense on Twitter, or we'll see it, force you to defend it in the court of public opinion here on the airwaves. What happened today, if you were listening before the break, you caught this, but I'll explain it again. For those that did not hear it, I randomly saw a picture of Mitch on Twitter earlier today, like connected to an account, and I thought, oh, Mitch changed his Twitter picture. And it's a picture of him with Gene Simmons. I couldn't tell who it was, so I was like, let me click, see what he changed his picture to. And when it popped up, it was actually an old Twitter account of Mitch's that has not been active since November 15th of 2012. It is at the Fort 1015, as opposed to now, you can follow him at Mitch the Fort. So I decided Mitch is going to have to go through and defend some of these tweets that he was throwing out there in 2012. Set this up for us. Was this like shortly after you had started working here? This has to be about right around when you started working here, right?
Yeah, this was right after I started working here. The reason I don't use that Twitter account anymore is because Twitter basically locked me out of it. They wanted to me to change my password. Well, to do that, they have to send me an email. Well, never got the email, so I took a hiatus from Twitter and came back a year and a half, 2 years later.
Oh, really? Oh, wow, that's a long hiatus there. Like Michael Jordan.
I really wasn't into it back then.
Came
it
back
took me a while.
Wearing the 4 or 5. Yeah. Okay. Well, the first one, like right out of the gates, the first tweet that I see is you retweeted the Iron Sheik.
Yeah.
And it's got a bad word in it. I can't say it on the air. It says Gaza Strip or Gaza Dog Blank.
That's where I got the word jabroni from. The Iron Sheik.
So like what it, do you have? What
I don't know.
What is that? Okay. All right. So
that's about as good as it's going to get there.
No defense on the first tweet. Here's this from October 30th of 2012. Coach Schneider isn't as scary as he looks.
He's not. He's not a scary guy. He can be intimidating.
Does he look scary?
No. That's more of a joke.
Intimidating. I can see intimidating.
Yeah.
I think that's a better word. But what do you have any idea what caused that? Like what brought that on? Was it something at a press conference?
So this probably would have been the remember the get off my lawn picture during the Baylor game in 2011?
The get off my lawn picture?
Yeah, there was a picture going around with the caption "Get off my lawn." It was after K-State took the lead against Baylor with the field goal.
Huh. No, nope. I really don't.
And they caught
nothing.
Snyder, he was basically staring like right at a camera to the north. And he had a really scary, intimidating look on his face.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So you were just trying to warn everybody in light of the meme.
I'll try to find it and show you guys.
Here's this one from the 24th of October. And I feel like 24th of October, 2012. This, to me, screams precursor to Mitch's WTF facts that he now retweets on the reg. Says, according to at ESPN Radio, Sandoval is the second heaviest to hit 3 home runs in a playoff game. Babe Ruth beat Pablo out by 11 pounds.
So I remember tweeting that because I was right here in this studio, right here in this very spot. My old job was to run run the boards for baseball, and that was during the World Series. San Francisco was, I don't remember who they were playing, but Pablo Sandoval, third baseman, was just going nuts, hitting home runs left and right, and then ESPN Radio dropped that stat that he is the heaviest to do what he did.
Unfortunately, it had 0 likes, 0 retweets.
I probably don't have any followers.
He's not getting a lot of run for a lot of these.
All right, I know you spent some time mm-hmm. digging some up here. I'll
I
let
did.
You fire away.
August 27th, 2012, I would make a better ring announcer than at Justin Roberts.
That's right.
On Raw.
I am I'm the best ring announcer in the state of Kansas, I dare say the Midwest, and I still make fun of the announcers today because they're not very good. And I actually do ring announcing down in Mount Hope, Kansas, really small town, and I don't know. I think I'd do a better job than a lot of the people you hear on TV.
Hey, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that for a second.
September 2nd, 2012, rock and roll is an addiction.
It is.
And that's all. That's all you said. That's just
rock and roll is an addiction.
There was no context to that.
So you're not addicted to caffeine, but you're addicted to rock and roll.
I've been addicted to rock and roll all my life.
Okay. Hey, rock on.
And my favorite.
I have to have it in my life.
This is my favorite, and I gave this one to John earlier. It's pretty awesome. Adding bike across the United States to my bucket list.
Oh, yeah.
Hashtag because I feel like it. That's from September 29th, 2012. What do you.
Have you done that yet?
Have you? Yeah. Where are you getting on that?
Let me tell you something. I rode a bike for exercise 3 summers ago. That is not going to happen because that is some of the most uncomfortable exercise you could probably find.
Well, what made you put – did you watch Forrest Gump? Were you inspired by Forrest Gump running across America?
I don't know what inspired me, but it just sounded – I felt like it at the time apparently.
And the actual event is Bike Across America, not Bike Across the United States. Well, I think that's kind of funny how you worded that.
I love everything about that. That's fantastic right there. The 80 followers of this Twitter account probably really enjoy that. I think look at the irony in this one. Look at the irony of this one right here, of that retweet.
Can you tell me?
it's about Mitt Romney and healthcare.
No.
Mitt Romney and healthcare. I'll tell you that much.
It comes
pretty ironic right now.
Comes from Mr. Bill Maher.
How about this? This is from the 2nd of October, 2012, and it's a picture of the Governor's Cup in the old front lobby of Veneer. That was like the coolest tweet that I saw in this because it brings you back to the old days of walking into that like foyer in Veneer. Before it was bulldozed, RIP, old Veneer. We do now know, thanks to Mitch's Twitter account, the Big 12 Conference, that the October 13th game between Kansas State and Iowa State in Ames, Iowa will kick at 11 a.m. Central on FX.
Remember that one.
On FX.
Yeah.
On FX.
Whoops. On FX, apparently, according to Mitch. Let's see. There's another shot literally from the studio, the same place you sit right now, and it's funny how exactly the same it looks. On the 29th of September, 2012.
Was I watching an Oklahoma State game?
You were watching Oklahoma State, Texas, yep.
I like this from September 27th. What the hell does RT mean? Like the letters RT. Have you found the answer to that question?
You were not very good at Twitter in this era.
Retweet.
Yeah. You were not a very good
Well, people put for – I still don't understand why some people will just send out a tweet and it starts with RT. Like they're trying to retweet somebody, but they just like copy and pasted their
back
actual tweet.
Back in those days, you could do it two different ways, and depending on what kind of app you had on your phone, it might do that.
This is just like such a great tweet without context from September 24th, 2012. It's in all caps, and it just says hashtag Team Hell No.
Oh. That was wrestling related.
Well, okay. You know how there's the Twitter account you guys were talking about, Wrestling Without Context.
Yeah.
We need a Mitch the Fort without context Twitter account.
It is absolutely Mitch the Fort without context. Oh, gosh. One of the worst calls in at NFL were made tonight.
Yeah, that
Vince
was
McMahon and the XFL are trending. Was that
the Seahawks
replacement refs?
Mm-hmm. Seahawks Packers.
How about that? Like, so you can actually go back and see some historical significance to the old Mitch Fortner Twitter feed. What was the one about Colin Klein? Because we were talking about that. We should have asked Shaylin about it.
Oh, man. Why am I blanking?
It was something to the effect of Colin Klein takes.
Oh, he always sounds like he's winded when he talks.
Yeah, that was a Mitch Fortner tweet.
Yeah.
That Colin Klein always sounded winded in interviews.
Okay.
You don't remember?
I don't remember retweeting that, but.
No, you didn't retweet it. You did it yourself.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that was a Mitch Fortner original, man.
Mm-hmm.
That was a Mitch Fortner original.
I mean, I haven't heard Colin talk in quite a while.
Did you go all the way down to his first tweet here? Because you said there was only like 100 of them, right? Oh,
yeah.
Yep, okay. Here was the first tweet. We'll wrap it up like this on Mitch's old Twitter account, the Fort1015, if you want to follow along. This was on August 23rd of 2012. It says, for my very first tweet, I would just like to say, hashtag Emaw.
There you go. That's all you need to know,
that's
man.
That's not really that bad. Like, that was not embarrassing. That's actually a pretty solid use of Twitter. Running the board for at 1350 KMAN at the same time as being on K-Rock, just getting my hours in. This was enjoyable. All right, I'll stop. We'll roll on with the show here. But the Fort 1015, if you want to go check that out. Jabroni of the Week from Mitch at 550. When we come back, is Darren Sproles your favorite Wildcat of all time? Here on his birthday, we'll get into that discussion coming up on the game. We're back here on the game. John Kurtz, Tyler Dreiling, Mitch Fortner. Jabroni of the Week coming up from Mitch in a little bit over 10 minutes. Another reminder, if you have the iTunes podcast app store, whatever it is, you can find us there. The Game KMAN, just search it out. Hour 1 and Hour 2, as files will be up there from the show every single day. Also, Better Player on the website now, newsradiokman.com, and the on-demand tab for that. If you'd prefer to listen to the show that way. We talked some Darren Sproles earlier today. It is his birthday, and the Philadelphia Eagles official Twitter account put out a sweet video of him destroying Olathe Pop Warner football leagues back in the day when he was a kid. It's very entertaining. I would highly recommend it. If you follow me, J.L. Kurtz, you saw me retweet it.
He's always worn number 43.
Pretty much. Well, he started at K-State as 32.
True.
For a very short period of time before going to 43. But, yeah, he was rocking 43 back in those highlights. So, you know, I was having a conversation with somebody in the office earlier today about, you know, like, where is Darren Sproles fitting in your all-time favorite Wildcats? I'm sure for a lot of people he's very high up there. If you know me at all, you know who my number one is, and nobody's touching Michael Bishop. But Darren Sproles, I tweeted this out earlier, I think he's in the discussion for me as being number two. Like, he's got a shot there. I still think because he was never as, you know, that I tend to like the boisterous, loud, swaggy, fun kind of guys. And look, Darren Sproles' play certainly talked enough for all those things, and he was amazing to watch. And such an anomaly with his height. I mean, he was so unique with everything and was just a tremendous player, as productive of a player as you could have ever hoped to have. So I can't say enough good things about Darren Sproles. But I think because of some of that, he just loses, to me, some of the luster that it really props guys up for me. And when we talk about like a top five here, some of the names that at least get on the fringe are basically purely because of that, and they have nothing to do with production. Mm-hmm. So that's the way that I go. That's the way I think and I feel. So I'm just putting that out there right now. I think if you really held a gun to my head, Darren Sproles would probably be my third all-time favorite Wildcat. I would – L. Roberson number two, man. I mean, I just fell in love so much with those quarterbacks from that era that were unique at that time in college football, and just a blast to watch the mobile quarterbacks running around, throwing bombs, because that's what the offense was. It was not just the running, but guys who were incredible at running the football, and then they would just throw bombs down the field. Like, that was the offense. And when it worked well – when you got past the L. Roberson 39% completion percentage in 2001 and it started to work well, it was incredibly fun to watch. L. Roberson had his moment at midfield with Jamal Lord. I love all of that. Dancing around in the Big 12 championship game after beating Oklahoma. He did that like flop his arms thing. I remember him doing that in the Holiday Bowl against Arizona State too. I ate it up. So Roberson's two, and then Darren probably falls in line right there at number three.
I'm glad that you pointed out that it does not have to be, you know, statistically verified. I mean, you can.
No, I mean, look, there's no wrong answer here. This is just who you like.
Well, you say that, and then I feel like when I tell you that.
Oh, I'm sure I'll crush you, yeah.
Michael Bishop would be number four for me, that you're going to,
well, that's,
you know.
Blasphemous. Yeah.
Exactly. That's how you're going to feel. But I do have Sproles number one. And there is, I mean, look, I put this together over like 10 minutes. I probably, to do it justice, would need to spend like weeks on this to really go through everything. But if you're just talking about guys that had a special place to me, especially with me growing up in that era a little bit later than you, Sproles is number one, L is number two for me. Number three, I've got David Allen, because I just absolutely loved how K-State emphasized special teams seemingly more than anyone else in the country. And I thought that David Allen, whenever he touched the ball, was one of the most exciting players I've ever seen to watch. So him on the
returns. No, that's a good one. I considered that because, for me, it was at the peak of, you know, my obsession with K-State football, to that 1998 team. I mean, he was a huge part of that. Take this to your grave, should be the all-time leader, or at least at the time should have been the all-time leader in return touchdowns. He had the one called back against Iowa, which would have been the record setter to break Johnny Rogers' record. But they called it back on a BS penalty, and then he got hurt and was out the rest of the year.
Yeah. Now, as far as number four is Michael Bishop. As far as number five goes, I had three different guys that I put in that spot. Mark Cimino was there. Terrence Newman was there. But again, this goes to just a memory for me when I was in Arrowhead Stadium in 2003. The interception by Teddy Sims, the pick six to be the dagger there. I never forgot Ted Sims after that moment, and I never lost him on the field after that, the rest of his career. So for me, honestly, that's worthy of getting into the top five. That was huge for me.
Well, I suppose I can see what you're saying there. I mean, am I ever going to forget Ted Sims? No, because of that play. I mean, he's in the K-State history books with that one. That was the dagger for the Oklahoma Big 12 championship game.
I know it's a really obscure name to throw in there, but it just –
Could you even tell me, like, what years he played?
Yeah, 3 to 5. 3 to 5. And he was probably better in 3 than he was – I mean, I don't know.
No, there's no doubt. Yes, he was.
Well, the problem was the teams that he was on weren't nearly as good, and that's unfortunate. He would have been higher on that list.
It was easier in 2003 when you got Josh Buell.
Yes. Well, see, he's poking holes in it, even though it's a total emotional thing. It has nothing to do with stats. I know he played from 03 to 05.
I told you I was going.
It was that special because I was 10 years old. I was in Arrowhead Stadium. That's the point when the numbness, because of how cold it was, you started forgetting about it and you didn't even notice it because you knew you were about to win the Big 12 championship. And that was big for me. So I gave him the nod on that.
You already said Darren Sproles was your all-time favorite.
Top three or top five is really tough for me. Number two would have to be Josh Buell for, 184 tackles.
Dude, you're all about these pound-for-pound guys.
Well,
Josh Buell should have played like corner or safety, but instead he's a linebacker out there pushing 200 tackles. I love it. I love Buell.
But number three, I don't know. I used to love, just because of his name, Taco Wallace. As a kid.
Yes. Well, funny story with that. I loved his name as well. I mean, he was a pretty good receiver. He was a solid receiver. But the best thing that ever came of that, you've heard me say before that, like, when I was a kid, I grew up on the message board scene. Like, that was how I kept up with everything and really followed K-State football, was the message board scene. And I should remember somebody, I don't know if it still exists or still out there, but someone's username on one of the boards once upon a time was Soft Taco Wallace. And I thought that was, like, the greatest thing that I've ever seen. So that's really the significance that Taco Wallace holds for me. Other guys I consider, like, I don't know, I was big on the receivers deep down the field. Quincy Morgan, Darnell McDonald. Dude, D-Mac, that Darnell McDonald was awesome. I love him. And a good Quincy Morgan was probably a better, more productive receiver. There's no probably about that. But Darnell McDonald's right there for me, too. And I was like, man, I'm not thinking about anybody on defense. Like, maybe Jeff Kelly. Big Jeff Kelly fan.
Well, I'm surprised that Terrence Newman isn't in your top five.
Yeah, no, I mean, he'd be there. He'd be in the conversation. I guess I did put that on Twitter earlier, that Tinu's there. Tinu was great. He was awesome. But the names that I've been waiting to drop out here that are, like, on the fringe for me, that I know everybody will hate me for, and this is why. Yeah. This is how you know how I formulate my thoughts and opinions and why I like what I like and who I like what I like. But, dude, like, D. Sams.
Oh, don't. Oh.
D. Sams and Frank Murphy, man.
Frank Murphy, I expected. I knew that was coming. I didn't think about D. Sams until 10 seconds ago, and no. I'm sorry. We cannot do this right now. Not on Darren Sproles' birthday.
If I would have been this age, if I would have been 27 and hosting a radio show in 1998, I can't tell you how many discussions I would have had about, instead of Sams Waters, it would have been Frank Murphy, Eric Hickson. Like, why is this fifth-year senior that's just been around the program forever taking up the spot of one of the most talented JUCO players we've ever seen in Frank Murphy?
The first name from Snyder 2.0 that you bring up is Daniel Sams. It's not Tyler Lockett. It's not HB7, as Shaylin called Colin once, apparently. It's not Arthur Brown. It's Daniel Sams.
This should not come as a shock to you.
No, it doesn't. I'm not mad. I'm disappointed.
Can we just do a top three on Ron Prince names while we're at it here?
Ooh, okay. I like that.
Patton is one of them for me.
Jordy.
Jordy, of course.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, that's tough because the overlap there, you have guys that were
Freeman
either side. I mean,
it has to be Freeman, right?
If you're talking about Colin Klein, who brought Colin Klein to Manhattan?
Stop it.
Is that not a fair point to bring up?
I'm not.
Who brought Colin Klein to Manhattan?
I'm not listening to this.
Who brought Daniel Thomas to Manhattan?
Fake news.
right. Yeah. Well, that is what it's become today. If you disagree with it, it's fake. So I guess, you know.
D-Train would have a spot at the table. He was pretty awesome.
Yeah, but he only played for Snyder.
That's right. I forget he didn't have a
recruited
Prince
by
here.
Prince, played for Snyder.
Yeah.
You forget that, man. Colin Klein, recruited by Ron Prince.
I just, in my brain, all of the good players from the Ron Prince era.
Marcus Watts.
Played for Snyder.
That's like hugging both sides of the line. Yeah.
And all of the bad players that played for Snyder played for Prince.
Anybody.
Ian Campbell.
Anybody that's answer is not, yeah. Well, like Rob Jackson. I mean, there were some good players involved there. But anybody whose answer is not Dion Murphy. I mean, if there is a player that epitomizes the Ron Prince era, it's Dion Murphy.
Can we say William Powell?
A lot of flash, a lot of substance, or a lot of flash, not much in the way of substance, way too overly cocky, and he was recruited by Prince, played for Prince, then he was out. Like, Dion Murphy is, if you are looking for one guy and you say, like, how could you in a short way tell me what the Ron Prince era was like? It's Dion Murphy's career.
Atrail Snipes.
Yeah. I'm making a point here. You're just trying to throw out names.
Yeah.
That's what this has devolved into. Okay, great. You remember Atrail Snipes. That's awesome.
It's a better Murphy, name than Taco Wallace.
Dion Murphy's sitting there telling everybody that he was going to take, like, multiple punts back to the house before the 08 KU game, and then they go get beat by 50. Ugh, Dion Murphy. Jabroni of the Week's next.
it helps. And people will listen. Add your voice at oktotalk.org. oktotalk.org. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters.
KMAN Game Sports Update with Mitch Fortner.
It's powered by Ready Systems. Call Ready Systems. You can be watching movies by your pool. College World Series continued today. TCU still alive. They avoid elimination and beat Texas A&M by the score of 4-1. A game coming up at 6 o'clock here, just about 7 minutes away on ESPN, Louisville and Florida. Plus, Royals baseball on the air tonight here on KMAN. They just won their 8th game in 9 tries. Went over the Boston Red Sox last night, 4-2 at Kauffman Stadium. Kansas City is now 3.5 back, still 3.5 back in the Central, but now 34-35 in the season. So they're one game away from being back to 500. But tonight, the Royals have to defeat the crazy but very good Chris Sale, as Matt Strom will be countering for Kansas City, making his second career start. First pitch, 7:15, pregame, 6:30 here on News Radio KMAN. Jabroni of the Week is next.
And then everyone said, Jabroni.
You jabronis hit the jackpot.
That Jabroni you have sitting in your studio.
Ow.
Is this Jabroni's name?
Jabroni of the Week.
All right, gentlemen, and of course, I'm going to start with my three dishonorable mentions. First, I'm going to start with Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr is the head coach of the Golden State Warriors. Of course, not going to bash him at all for winning another NBA title.
Pretty good to be Steve Kerr right now.
Yeah, he's living pretty high right now. This is his 7th championships, 2nd as a coach, and 5th. He had 5 as a player. But after the parade, they all met up somewhere in Oakland, and the whole team gave a speech. Steve Kerr got up there, even though he's not one for giving speeches. He did it in 2015, so he's going to do it again this year. He decided this time to call out everybody on the team and say a little something about him. Got everybody in, except for one person.
Oh, that's right.
He forgot to mention Steph Curry, the 2-time MVP. Did not say a word about Steph Curry, and his wife had to tell him later on that he forgot about Steph. And he later on, I think he was on social media, called himself an idiot.
Okay, well, I like that.
Which is another word for a jabroni sometimes.
Yeah, so he basically nominated himself, huh?
All right, next, I am going to throw in an MMA fighter by the name of Myung-Hun Man. That's his name, Myung-Hun Man. He is from South Korea, and he was in an MMA fight over the weekend with a guy named Agor Yelly. And, I mean, I've brought up shots to the groin in Jabroni of the Week once in a while, but this is the worst I have ever seen.
Yeah, it's bad.
This is absolutely vicious. I mean, this poor young guy, Myung-Hun Man, I don't know how he survived.
He looks like he was asking for death.
Now, this is more of a visual thing. You need to see it for yourself. Check out the Game KMAN Twitter account. It's up there. I retweeted it. I put Jabroni of the Week question mark. You'll be able to find it. I felt bad for this guy. That it was so bad. This kick to the groin was so bad. I mean, it just echoed through the arena. The place just lost its mind. And a doctor had to come in, put a towel over him so he could be examined, because they would not move him out of the cage because they were taking extreme precautions.
All this just makes me uncomfortable. Like,
The emotion on this kid's face, and he's not very – he's only 22.
He wanted to die.
He was in so much pain. And he was wearing a cup and everything.
I don't like this. Not a fan.
It was the most vicious
thing
I've ever seen. All right, next. Sorry, I'm going to go – I'm going to throw in Joe Buck. We talked about this yesterday during the U.S. Open, talking about Brooks Koepka, who won the U.S. Open, He called his girlfriend by the wrong name. He called her Becky Edwards, but that was his ex. His new girlfriend is Jenna Sims. And Joe Buck's color guy, Brad Faxon, had to come on and say, no, that's Jenna Sims. There, Joe. And Joe would later come out and say, well, some guy handed me a card, and that's what the information had on the card.
You were gone for this. My theory was right.
I was listening. Don't worry. Even when I have to leave early, I'm still listening to the show.
Okay.
But at the time, that has to be a pretty embarrassing moment, and he was lit up on social media for that. But finally, my Jabroni of the Week, it's NBA-related. Cavaliers owner Dan Gilbert. Now, Tyler brought this up to me in the office, and I was considering it, but I didn't know a whole lot about it until I started reading up on it. What happened was Dan Gilbert fired GM David Griffin. Now, right now, I'm sure the Cavaliers are trying to do anything they can to keep LeBron James in Cleveland. There's been rumors going around he's going to go to L.A., play for the Lakers or Clippers. Well, here's the deal. LeBron James was pretty good friends with Dan Gilbert, and if you want to make the king happy, you keep his friends around.
David Griffin is who you meant.
Or
he was good friends with the GM.
David Griffin is the one who was fired by Dan Gilbert. And David Griffin, good friends with LeBron James. He's gone now. Well, if you're trying to keep the king around, you can't fire his friends. You can't get rid of him. So more likely, I think that was the final nail in the coffin. Even LeBron James gone on social media said, nobody consulted me about this. He's basically the leader of the clubhouse, obviously.
And LeBron and Dan Gilbert have still had issues even since the letter when he left the first time. He did come back, but I just heard a video that had gotten out there about like a week ago of LeBron James explaining he still didn't really have good feelings for Dan Gilbert and just called him the GM. He did not call him by name. Yeah, the theory here, the prevailing theory that I picked up, like I'm not an NBA guy, but there was like a rumor that the Cavs were positioning themselves to try and go get Jimmy Butler from Chicago. But then right after that broke, they announced that they were firing the GM. So basically the thought here is that the GM was trying to go make the team as good as they could possibly be for next year to make another run at a title. But Dan Gilbert would prefer to just assume that LeBron's leaving and set up long term and that they may have gotten crosswise. Then he fired him. Yeah, LeBron's going to be somewhere else.
Plus, Kyrie Irving said that if LeBron leaves, I want to be traded. So you're burying your franchise right now.
Okay. Yeah, that's not great.
NBA draft week gossip is more entertaining than the NBA itself.
Yeah, like the entire playoffs and all that. I totally agree with you. Tomorrow, part of the show may be cut off because of the Royals' day game, but we will talk to you for at least part of it. From Mitch and Tyler, I'm John. See ya.